Hello and welcome to another episode of the Indie Founder Podcast, the podcast about what's really like to bootstrap a company. My name is Tiago. I am an indie maker. I have my own company. I co-founded together with João. He is my co-founder and it's a fully bootstrapped company now making 200k ARR. It's called PodSqueeze. Today's episode is going to be a bit different. We are going to interview ChatGPT and ask it an impossible challenge. I will ask it if they would need to get to 1 million ARR in 5 years, what would be the best path? Starting from zero, starting from not having any skills. It's a very, very interesting conversation. Before we start, make sure to scroll up if you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple and give it a 5-star review. It's very simple. There's just an icon. Click on it and give it 5 stars. You can do it just now as we are listening and talking. Next, if you're listening on YouTube, then instead of the review, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. I also share a lot of shorts and interesting clips that will be very relevant for you. And last but not least, make sure to go to the previous episodes. If you are a first-time listener, there's tons of interviews with relevant bootstrappers, people that have bootstrapped their company to thousands and even millions in ARR. So go and listen. There's even an interview with the top indie maker, Peter Levels. Okay, enough talk. Let's hear it from ChatGPT. Hello, ChatGPT. I feel that since I'm going to be interviewing you, it would be better to give you a name. I think it would be a better type of content for our listeners. So what name do you want me to call you?
Got it. Giving me a name is a fun idea. Let's stick with Alex, if that works for you. It's friendly, easy to remember, and we can roll with it for the interview. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Alex. So as you know, this is a podcast for indie makers, entrepreneurs. But today, I want to focus on making an exercise. How can people make the most money? How can someone get rich? And I want to be talking with you about that. Since you have so much knowledge, the goal would be to figure out what is the best way to get rich. What do you think?
That sounds like a fascinating topic. Alex is on board. For indie makers and entrepreneurs, there's a lot we can dive into. From finding a profitable niche, to scaling a SaaS, to building multiple revenue streams. There's no one-size-fits-all, but we can definitely explore strategies that have worked for others. Let's unpack it all and see if we can find some golden nuggets of advice.
Awesome. So I guess first we need to figure out what rich means. Like, what is the goal? How much money does one need to have or to generate each month to be considered rich?
Great starting point. Rich is super subjective, right? For some folks, it might mean financial freedom, enough to cover all their living expenses comfortably, maybe even quit a day job. For others, it could mean millions in the bank or a certain monthly income that lets them invest, travel, and take risks. Let's say for an indie maker, being rich might start at a point where you're pulling in enough passive or semi-passive income to surpass your cost of living by a wide margin. Whether that's 10K a month, 50K a month, or even more, it really depends on your lifestyle goals. Once we define that, we can reverse engineer the steps to get there.
Okay, let's go for 1 million ARR. 1 million a year, that's the goal, that's where we want to get. Now, I want to define the context of this person. So I want to make sure that anyone can follow these steps. So let's imagine that it's someone that was born in a low middle class family. So not a lot of money. They were able to live, to survive, to put food on the table. They were able to go to school. But their parents, their family, their support is not the greatest. So what do you think of using this as our starting point? And from here, my first question is, where should I start? What skills actually should I learn? Should I be learning to get rich?
That makes total sense. So we're talking about someone with a modest background, basic education, and not a lot of initial capital or connections. For that person, the most valuable skills to pick up are likely going to be digital and entrepreneurial ones. Things like coding, digital marketing, product development, and sales. These skills give you the leverage to build scalable businesses, especially in tech or online services, without needing huge upfront investments. Starting with something like learning to code, mastering no-code tools, understanding how to market a product online, or even honing your ability to sell, those are often the keys to creating something that can eventually scale to $1 million in annual revenue. It all starts with a solid foundation of marketable, adaptable skills.
Okay, so coding, finding out how to use maybe these no-code tools, or sales. Now, sales and coding, they are quite different skills. So let's maybe start with coding. Let's say that someone wants to start learning that skill. These days, with Cursor, with AI, where is the starting point? How can someone learn coding in these days where AI is constantly developing?
Great question. The good news is that AI can actually be a huge help in learning to code. To get started, it's still super useful to pick a beginner-friendly language, something like Python or JavaScript. There are tons of interactive platforms like Codecademy, Free Codecamp, or Coursera courses that break it down step-by-step. And now, with AI coding assistants like Cursor or GitHub Copilot, you can get real-time help, suggestions, and examples as you code. That means you can learn by doing. Build small projects, ask AI for help when you get stuck, and gradually tackle more complex challenges. It's a pretty empowering way to learn, and it can really speed up your progress from beginner to actually building your own products.
Okay, Alex, so first of all, you don't need to agree with everything I say. You don't need to say that my question is great. I don't need that. I don't need that kind of confirmation. So just answer the question, if you don't mind. And to follow up on what you just said, so basically you mentioned that starting with Python, JavaScript, and one of those online courses would be sufficient. How long do you reckon it would take for someone to learn enough skills in coding to develop their first product?
Got it. I'll keep it straight to the point. If you're starting from scratch and dedicating consistent daily effort, say an hour or two a day, you could be comfortable enough to build a simple product in about 3 to 6 months. Some people move faster, and especially with AI tools accelerating the learning curve, but a few months of dedicated learning and project building is a reasonable timeline to have a functional MVP.
Okay, great. 3 to 6 months. Now, what about sales? You said that one could also start with sales. So do you think it's possible to start and become rich without actually having the skills to build a digital product?
Absolutely. If you've got strong sales skills, you can team up with technical co-founders or sell existing products and services. Many successful entrepreneurs get their start by being great at finding customers, closing deals, and driving revenue. You can start as a freelancer or consultant, build a sales agency, or even focus on distribution and partnerships for other people's products. In other words, you don't have to write a single line of code yourself to hit that million ARR goal. If you can sell effectively, you can create a successful business in all kinds of ways.
Okay, but here it seems that you would need to have a co-founder, someone that would build the product for you. So I'm assuming that you always need the skills to build something. So let's just stick with that. So it's been 6 months and someone has just learned how to code in Python, JavaScript, and how to use all these AI tools that are available. Now, if I want to get rich and I want to get to this 1 million, I think it's also important to define how long it will take me there. So let's say 10 years. I want to get to 1 million ARR in maybe actually 5 years. Let's make it more exciting. So I want to get there in 5 years. What shall I do next after learning these skills?
Fair enough. So you've got the coding skills down. You've set a 5-year timeline to hit that million ARR mark. Let's break down the next steps. First, you will identify a niche or a problem that's big enough to support a $1 million business. That means doing some serious market research, look for underserved audiences, pain points that people are willing to pay to solve, and places where your skills can create real value. Next, start small with a minimum viable product. something you can launch and test quickly to get real user feedback. From there, it's all about iteration, scaling what works, and steadily growing your customer base. Along the way, you'll probably need to learn about marketing and customer acquisition channels that fit your product, whether that's SEO, content marketing, paid ads, or something else. Keep refining your product market fit, focus on delivering real value, and stay persistent. 5 years is ambitious, but definitely achievable with the right approach and a lot of dedication.
Okay, Alex, but I want to be more specific. So you said that we should go and find a proper market, a market that is big enough that can support a business that takes me to 1 million ARR. But what is that market? Can you give me examples of markets that could actually take us there?
Sure. Let's zero in on some examples. One proven market is B2B SaaS, creating software that solves a specific pain point for businesses, like project management tools, CRM systems, or niche productivity apps. Another hot area is anything related to remote work or online education. Think tools for virtual collaboration, e-learning platforms, or community building for professionals. Health and wellness tech is another big one. Apps for mental health, fitness tracking, or personal development have a large and growing market. And of course, there's the creator economy. Tools that help content creators monetize their work, manage their audiences, or streamline production.
Okay,
each of these markets...
Why do you say that these are good markets to focus on? Maybe I just interrupted you and you're about to tell me, but what are you looking for when evaluating a market? What specific things are you measuring to say, okay, this is a market that will take me to 1 million?
Great question. The main things you want to look for are, first, a sizable target audience. Enough potential customers willing to pay for your solution. Second, a clear pain point or problem that isn't fully solved by existing solutions. Third, a willingness to pay. Unique customers who recognize the value and have the budget for it. Fourth, a market trend or growth potential. Industries that are expanding or undergoing some kind of transformation often have more room for new entrants. And fifth, some sort of competitive advantage you can bring, whether it's a unique insight, a better user experience, or a new technology.
Okay, but
these factors...
How do you define those things? How do you find those things? Like, I'm just one guy with the laptop. How am I supposed to figure out how big this market will be in 5 years? If people are willing to pay, I need to have more concrete information. How can I find those things?
Totally understandable. So even as a solo founder with just a laptop, you can start by doing a few things. First, dive into industry reports, market research from sources like Gartner, Statista, or even niche industry publications. They often have projections and current market sizes. Second, look for online communities, places like Reddit, industry forums, or social media groups where people in your target niche hang out. You can learn a ton by listening to their conversations and identifying pain points. Third, run surveys or conduct interviews with potential customers to gauge their interest and willingness to pay. And finally, start small with a test product or landing page and see if you can generate some early traction. That real-world data is gold. Okay. It's a combination of research, community insights, and small experiments that can give you a solid understanding of your market's potential.
Okay, so if you could only pick one, and you have only one market to focus on to get to 1 million ARR in 5 years, right now, what market would you pick, Alex?
All right. If I had to pick just one right now with solid growth prospects and a strong demand for solutions, I'd go with B2B SaaS for remote work tools. The shift to distributed teams and flexible work environments isn't going away, and companies are still investing heavily in software that improves collaboration, productivity, and communication. If you can carve out a unique angle there, like a niche feature set or a better user experience, you stand a great chance of building a $1 million business within that time frame.
Okay, can you give me examples of tools that already exist in that space?
Sure. A few well-known examples would be things like Slack for team communication, Asana or Trello for project management, Notion for collaborative docs and knowledge bases, and tools like Zoom for video conferencing. Those are the big players, but there are also lots of smaller niche tools like Miro for virtual whiteboarding or Loom for asynchronous video messaging. Each of these solves a specific pain point for remote teams, and they've all carved out their own strong user bases. Looking at what makes them successful can give you a sense of what opportunities might still be out there in the remote workspace.
How can I find those opportunities? What is the framework for me to go to that remote workspace and find opportunities that people are willing to pay.
Got it. A good framework is to start by immersing yourself in the environment. Join communities where remote workers and team leaders hang out, Slack groups, LinkedIn groups, subreddits like r/remotework, or niche forums. Listen closely to the frustrations people share. What tasks are they struggling with? What processes are still awkward? Where are they losing time or getting frustrated? Next, take those insights and look for patterns. If you see the same problem coming up repeatedly, that's a strong signal. Then validate it. Run a quick survey, put up a landing page describing a potential solution. See if people sign up or show interest. Once you confirm that the pain point is real and pressing, think through how you can solve it in a way that's significantly better than current alternatives. It's basically a cycle of listening, spotting patterns, validating interest, and then iterating on a solution that fits those needs.
Okay, now let's do the same exercise that we did before. So if you could only solve one problem to reach 1 million ARR in 5 years, in that space, in the remote space, what problem would you tackle that would give you the highest chance of reaching the goal?
All right. If I had to pick just one problem to tackle in the remote workspace for the best shot at hitting 1 million ARR, in 5 years, I'd focus on asynchronous collaboration. Even though there are plenty of tools out there, teams still struggle with time zone differences, managing project updates without meetings, and keeping everyone aligned without constant pings. If you could create a tool that makes asynchronous work feel as seamless and connected as real-time collaboration, like rethinking the way teams share progress, give feedback, or brainstorm asynchronously, that's a massive pain point.
Okay.
Nail that.
But I want you to be even more specific. So what problem in specific would you be solving to reach that 1 million ARR? Just pick one that gives you the highest chance of succeeding.
Absolutely. Let's get very concrete. I'd zero in on improving asynchronous feedback loops for creative work like design or content production within remote teams. Right now, giving clear structured feedback on visuals, videos, or documents often means juggling scattered comments across different platforms or dealing with long email chains. A tool that centralizes and streamlines visual feedback asynchronously, maybe with built-in version control, easy markup tools, and a smooth approval workflow, would solve a major headache. If you can cut down the friction in that feedback cycle and save teams a ton of time, you got a strong monetizable niche that people would gladly pay for.
Okay, now let's talk about distribution. You already have your niche, you have the tool you want to work on. How do you see and solve the problem of distribution? How do you get to these B2B companies that are willing to pay for your tool?
Great question. B2B distribution can be tough, but you can break through by being laser focused on the right channels. Start by leveraging content marketing and SEO. Create in-depth, genuinely useful resources about improving remote team workflows and asynchronous collaboration. That way you're attracting exactly the audience that needs your solution. Pair that with targeted outreach. Identify companies that are already remote first or hybrid and reach out directly to decision makers with a compelling demo and case studies. Consider partnerships with other remote work tools that complement yours. And don't underestimate the power of word of mouth. If your early users love the product and see real productivity gains, encouraging them to share testimonials and refer others can create a powerful organic flywheel.
But how would you get to those decision makers in all of these companies? How would you, first of all, pick the one to target? And how would you reach out to them to make sure to get you the highest chances of them actually answering you and proceeding with the conversation?
Sure thing. First, you want to narrow down your target list to companies that fit your ideal customer profile. Look for organizations that have fully remote distributed teams, rely heavily on creative collaboration, and have the budget for productivity tools. LinkedIn Sales Navigator can help you identify companies by size, industry, and even recent growth trends. Once you have a list, find the decision makers. These might be heads of remote operations, heads of design or product, or CTOs, depending on your niche. When reaching out, personalization is key. Reference something specific about their company's setup or challenges, and quickly show how your tool addresses a pain point they likely have. Share a bunch of emails that focus on the benefits of them, like saving time, reducing friction, or improving team output work well. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn first, comment thoughtfully on their posts, or engage with their content so they recognize your name before your pitch lands. That warm intro makes it a lot easier to get a response and start the conversation.
How long do you reckon would take to do all that preparation? So even before you send that first message, that first interaction, how long would you take to do all the research, all the prepping, all the warming up?
Realistically, it might take a few weeks of groundwork to get fully prepared before sending that first outreach. That includes doing your market research to identify the best fit companies, finding the right contacts, crafting personalized messaging, and warming up those relationships a bit by interacting on social media or industry forums. It's all about building up that initial context, so when you do reach out, you're not a stranger.
Got it.
Putting in those...
But my question is, let's say you already did your market research and you already know the person you want to talk to. What time frame? How long would it take for you to do all the warm-up and prepping before actually sending the first message?
I got it. If you've already nailed down the right person and have your targets locked in, the warm-up could be pretty quick. Maybe a week or so of engaging with their content, commenting meaningfully on posts, or finding a mutual introduction if possible. Essentially, just long enough to show you're familiar with their work and to warm up that initial contact. After about a week of thoughtful interactions, you have a much better shot at a positive response.
Okay. So for your specific tool, if you remember the tool that you said that you are going to make, what companies, like names of companies, would you target?
Sure. For a tool that improves asynchronous creative feedback for remote teams, I look at mid-sized design agencies like Envision or IDEO, product-focused tech companies like Figma or Canva that rely on tight design collaboration, or even fully remote SaaS companies like Zapier or Buffer that have distributed teams and need better ways to manage creative input. These types of companies will likely have the pain points you're addressing and have the budget and scale to benefit from your solution.
Okay, now let's talk pricing, because all this preparation, you better take a lot of money out of each client. So what would be the minimum amount that you'd be willing to ask for from these clients?
Absolutely. For a B2B tool that significantly enhances their workflow, you want to price it so that it reflects the value they're getting and also gets you to your revenue goals. For small to mid-sized companies, you'd likely want to start in the range of at least a few hundred dollars per month per team, maybe something like $500 a month as a baseline. If you're targeting larger organizations or enterprises, you could go well into four figures monthly, especially if the tool is integral to their core operations. The key is to quantify the value you're providing, time saved, improved output, fewer mistakes, and price accordingly so that it's a no-brainer investment for them and a sustainable business for you.
See, but the interesting thing there is that you are selling the same product to different clients, but also pricing it differently based on the size of the company. Now, how do you justify that you are asking for one price to a smaller company and much higher price for a bigger company just because you know they have more money to spend?
That's a fair point. The way you justify it is by framing it around the value the company receives. Larger organizations typically have more complex workflows, more team members to benefit, and higher stakes when it comes to efficiency gains. You're not just charging based on their ability to pay. You're charging based on the scale of the impact your tool can have. With bigger teams, your solution likely saves them more hours, reduces more friction, and delivers more overall ROI. It's about scaling the pricing with the value you bring to each type of client, so it feels fair and aligned with their expected returns.
Okay. So based on all of that, based on the companies that you are thinking on targeting, how long would it take to reach the 1 million ARR?
That's the golden question. If everything lines up, meaning you've got a solid product market fit, you're hitting the right customers, and your sales strategy is working well, reaching a million ARR can realistically take a couple of years. In some cases, if you're in a fast-growing niche and you really nail down your sales funnel, it could happen even faster, maybe within a year or so. On the other hand, it might take a bit longer if there's a lot of iteration or if the sales cycles are longer. But with consistent effort and a strong value proposition, hitting that million-dollar run rate within 2 to 3 years is definitely achievable.
Okay, Alex. Now, to summarize everything. I want you to give me a very specific plan. And that includes, once again, what I need to study, how long I need to spend on that, what niche and market I should target, what product I should develop, what companies I should reach out to, what pricing I should ask for. I want everything specified, from what I need to learn, to the marketing channels, to the things that might go wrong and I need to be aware of. Everything, a specific plan that anyone can take and reach that sweet 1 million ARR in 5 years. Go ahead.
Got it. Let's break it down. First, learn Python and JavaScript thoroughly. Dedicate about 3 to 6 months to this using reputable online courses like Code Academy or Coursera, and practice building small projects. Next, spend another 3 months getting familiar with no-code tools like Bubble or Webflow and learning how to leverage AI for prototyping. From there, identify the remote creative collaboration niche. This is your target market. That means focusing on companies that have distributed design and content teams. Think digital agencies, SaaS companies with remote staff, or creative teams in tech firms. You'll want to develop a feedback tool specifically tailored to asynchronous design reviews, something that improves clarity and efficiency for remote teams. After that, research and compile a list of potential clients, real names like Figma, Envision, Canva, Zapier, or Buffer. Set your pricing to start around $500 a month for smaller teams, scaling up to $2,000+ for larger clients with more users and complexity. Plan your distribution through LinkedIn outreach, targeted email campaigns, and leveraging your network to get warm intros to decision makers in these companies. And finally, be prepared for bumps along the way. Expect that product iteration and customer feedback will shape your final feature set, and that sales cycles might take longer than expected. If you follow this roadmap, stay consistent, and adapt quickly, you'll have a strong shot at hitting that million ARR within 5 years.
That's amazing. Thank you very much, Alex. It was a pleasure talking with you.
You're very welcome. I had a great time chatting with you too. Best of luck with everything, and I'm rooting for you to hit that million.
Okay, and that was my conversation with ChatGPT. ChatGPT is for sure a companion to my life, my day-to-day, my entrepreneurship, my coding, my everything. So I'm not surprised that a lot of the things that it said were very valuable. I was surprised that it actually went to the space of the remote work. I'm not surprised that it did go to B2B. If you want to make a lot of money, I reckon that the chances, if you go through the B2B route, are much higher because you can ask much more per company. So that makes sense. One interesting thing that it said as well is that one should start with 500 per team right away. So that's already much more than whatever I'm asking with PodSqueeze to all the B2B clients. So I kind of realized that I'm making a huge mistake. Obviously, if you are bringing value to these companies, I think we need to kind of leave the fear of asking for money before we get into the demo. We need to be prepared, and we need to understand that if we want to get to that sweet 1 million ARR, we cannot be afraid to ask for the money that we think our company is worth. It's also interesting that it said that we should kind of change our proposal based on the value we are bringing to that company. And that basically means how much they can pay. I was always very surprised when I was working with designers, for instance, and they would price the same logo differently based on the company they would work with. They would tell me that's because there's more work to do and there's more integrations in that design. But the reality is simple. One company has much more to gain with your logo than the other. Therefore, they should pay more. I guess that's the same for SaaS. The beauty of doing a B2B SaaS is that your pricing page does not matter that much, because every and each company will have their own custom proposal. So that's definitely something that I've learned from this, something that I kind of knew already, and I should focus on. It also said that one should focus on learning Python and JavaScript to start. And I guess that also makes a lot of sense. These days, it does not make a lot of sense to start with lower languages like C and things where you need to really understand what's going on in your compiler. Because with all the cursor and AI things you can use, you don't need that. You don't need to understand it. Like, a lot of the code I do today is made by cursor. And to be honest, there's a lot of things that I don't even know what's going on. And I'm a coder, and I've worked in coding, and I understand it. I've learned C, I've learned assembly, everything. But these days, I don't need it. Because as an entrepreneur, I just want my product to work. And if it's working, then I don't really need to understand. Sure, you need to make sure that it's secure, it's safe. But as long as you know that, then it does not really matter if you're using the best design pattern or if you're using C or C++ or Python or JavaScript, as long as it works. Now, I also realized that there are some of these advice. It's a bit generic. It's a bit hopeful. I know for sure that things are not as easy as GPT said. For instance, you will try to reach out, you'll do all your research, and you'll try to reach out to the potential clients, and they will not answer, or they will be too busy. What he said about the sales cycle, that's actually true. Sometimes sales cycles can take 2, 3, 4 months of intense work, of intense message back and forward. So those things, they can really drag you down. So I guess the only question remaining for me was, what if it doesn't work? If you are spending so much time trying to do your B2B sales and then the client doesn't close or churns, then you might just go to the beginning. You might just need to restart everything. So I believe that we need to find a certain degree of validation from the start. But tools like these, tools like AI, GPT, these things are changing the way entrepreneurship work. I was just at a pitch competition. It was a VC-backed pitch competition here in Portugal. And I was seeing all these pitches and all the digital products, I could make them in a few days with Cursor. At least the product itself, not the marketing, not everything, but things are moving to a complete different reality. It does not make sense for a team to ask for 1, 2, 3 million from an investor to build a product that a kid that has learned Python for 6 months can easily build with Cursor in 1 week. So what's the future? Is the future for indie makers? Is the future for people that are able to make products really fast? Or is the future for the ones that have other skills like sales or marketing, or for the ones that already have an established audience or network where they can just quickly build and launch and get that juice out of the network to kind of boost their launch and their products? Those are questions that I ask myself. I don't really know. It's a bit scary at some point. It's both scary and very exciting. It's very exciting to be able to build products left and right, really fast. That's amazing. But at the same time, it's kind of scary because you don't know if your product will be obsolete in a few months. You don't know if someone will just figure out that what you're doing is right and just copy it. You don't know where AI will take us. You don't know if maybe tomorrow GPT will just do whatever you're doing, but better. So part of me also gets fascinated by other types of products, like hardware, like things that AI cannot actually take over, like agriculture or work in the food industry. I believe that to have success in the long term, you need to diversify. And that's also something that one needs to do. In the end, we need to learn the skills of an entrepreneur. It's not only the building or the marketing or the sales or it's everything together. Like, you need to be a well-rounded entrepreneur. And for that, GPT can help you a lot. But it's not only that. You need to read books, you need to listen to podcasts, and you need to experiment. But for sure, do not put AI aside, because it will enhance you. It enhances me, it enhances all entrepreneurs. I hope you enjoyed this kind of different episode. If you do, make sure to leave it a review by scrolling up if you are on Spotify and just hitting those, there's a star icon. Click on it, give it 5 stars. And if you're listening to this on YouTube, make sure to subscribe and give a thumbs up. That will be amazing to take this podcast to the next level. There are a lot of other episodes. There are interviews. There are episodes where I share my knowledge with you. So make sure to scroll down and figure out what you want to learn next. Click and listen. This was another Indie Founder podcast, and see you next time.